Welcome to the No More, Risk Better, a Credit Sites podcast. I'm Winnie Caesar, the Global Head of Strategy.
And I'm Zach Griffiths, the Credit Sites Senior Investment Grade Strategist.
As strategists, we aim to make sense of the macro and the micro, highlighting opportunities and the risks facing the fixed income markets.
As important as the macro call may be, we understand that credit investing, at its core, comes down to keen single name selection, and we at Credit Sites benefit from the expertise of our team of over 100 analysts across the US, Europe, and Asia.
This podcast offers a look at the conversations that we have with our analysts on a regular basis. If you are an investment professional focused on the wide universe of fixed income, you'll want to give this podcast a listen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Credit Sites podcast. This is Winnie Caesar, Global Head of Strategy at Credit Sites, and today I am joined by Dave Preston, who is the Head of Structured Credit Research and Analytics at AGL Credit Management. And Dave is basically my favorite CLO market guru to talk to. So I'm really excited to have you here today, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Happy to be here. Longtime listener.
All right. So Dave, I'm going to open with the question that everyone is always asking, are CLOs going to take down the financial system?
No, CLOs are not. CLOs have a very, very long track record. They're much different than the CDOs that were issued from 2003 to 2007 in many ways. But the primary difference is that the underlying assets have been rated for 100 years. They're actively managed by experienced credit managers. And the default rate, even on double B CLO tranches, is less than 2%. That's a cumulative default rate over 20 years. So we wouldn't think that CLOs would pose a risk to the financial system. The other thing is, I think we've learned in the last year or so that banks buying floating rate assets is maybe a better option than buying long-term fixed rate assets in many cases. And as floating rate assets, I think that CLOs are a very appropriate investment for many investors.
All right. So that's good to know because I do still own some CLO mezz equity mutual funds that I bought in the pandemic era. And I've just kind of been sitting on them, clipping a pretty nice coupon. So I'm glad that I should just continue to do that. But, you know, you mentioned that the long-term value proposition for some of these, you know, big banks, institutional investors for CLOs has been pretty good. And I want you to start by convincing me, a fixed income person, that the CLO value proposition for corporate credit investors still exists.
Great. So I guess I'll start from a high level, which is that CLO liability tranches, and we're talking about rated AAA to BB, are basically the by far the largest floating rate asset class here in the US. So for corporate credit investors that want floating rate exposure or want to change their rate duration in any way, CLO liabilities represent probably the best way to get floating rate exposure, which obviously, given the rate volatility over the past 3 years, is top of minds for many people. So the first way to think about this is that certainly on the investment grade side, it's the most scalable way to invest in floating rate. The second is compelling relative value in terms of risk return. CLOs offer wider spreads relative to comparably rated asset classes. That wider spread is really a function of some other things around the market and not a function of credit risk or risk of loss. So we're talking about CLO liabilities are callable within 2 years, so there's a cost to that. CLOs are not as liquid as, say, investment grade bonds. So you're getting compensated for some market dynamics in the wider spread, and it's not a function of the credit spread. In fact, if you look at credit losses in CLO liabilities versus corporate bonds, the CLO liabilities have a much, much lower default rate than comparably rated corporate bonds. So I think that it's a very good way for corporate credit investors to get exposure to higher quality floating rate debt, particularly with a high quality manager managing the assets.
So, you know, CLOs, leverage loans, those things have been performing well because rates are rising. But everyone now expects that, you know, the base rates are going to be going lower. Does that have some sort of risk on CLO spreads as a whole? Are we going to have to be seeing wider CLO, AAA, you know, BB tranche spreads because we have lower policy rates?
Yeah, it's really interesting how the CLO market has dealt with the rate question over the past few years. Prior to 2020, sort of the base case in the CLO market was when we saw increasing interest rates, we saw huge inflows into CLOs because people wanted floating rate exposure. That's been less true over the past 2 to 3 years, partly because as we've seen longer term rates go up, people have maybe wanted exposure to those higher yields. The other thing is we've seen over the past 2 to 3 years is concern over how floating rate borrowers will deal with rising interest costs. Obviously, you know, we've seen a little bit of stress in the leveraged loan market, but with a default rate of less than of right around 2%, I think that if you go back to 2021 and you had said rates will go up by this much in this period of time, people would have projected more stress. Certainly at AGL in our portfolio, we've seen very healthy EBITDA increases and revenue increases by most of the portfolio companies. So from that perspective, we haven't seen as many inflows into CLOs on a rate allocation perspective. Part of that is fear around the underlying borrowers. But now that we're sort of still going through the cycle, I think that those fears are subsiding to some point. When rates go down, what will that mean for CLOs? It's interesting to say because we have investors that on an absolute yield basis for the past 2 to 3 years, obviously CLOs have been very compelling with SOFR over 5%. But how people position their rate perspective depends on their view of the forward curve and what that means. So right now we're seeing very healthy inflows into CLOs. In fact, the first 2 months of the year has been a record year-to-date start. We're well above the pace in 2021 when we had a record year of issuance. So I think we're seeing very, very healthy demand for CLO liabilities.
I mean, healthy demand for pretty much all risk assets seems to be the name of the game right now. And I think that you can observe a trend historically with CLOs and corporates that kind of rising tide of positive sentiment really does lift all ships and keep spreads relatively intact. So, all right, you've convinced me. I'm going to go buy CLOs. I already own some mezz equity, but now I want some AAA tranche exposure. I want some double B tranche exposure. How do I do that as an investor? What are the different ways to invest in the CLO market?
Yeah, it's a great question. So obviously there are mutual fund managers will put CLOs in mutual funds. We've recently seen the rise of a few CLO ETFs, particularly at the AAA level. That's been an interesting development over the past 2 to 3 years, with CLOs entering that ETF era. The other way to think about it is from an asset manager perspective, primary investments tend to be, you know, newly formed portfolios. So cleaner from a credit perspective, longer weighted average life, so higher spread duration. A lot of money managers that will buy shorter CLOs, whether they're CLOs coming up to their end of their reinvestment period or CLO refinance tranches, which are shorter in weighted average life, will buy those and put them in short duration mutual funds. And the reason why the money managers like that is the shorter bonds have less price volatility in terms of obviously less spread duration because they're shorter. So those are some ways to do it. There's also some dedicated CLO equity funds that will trade the CLO equity tranches of many managers. That's the best way for, you know, a non-institutional investor to do it. On the AAA side, I will say that roughly 40 to 50% of the global CLO AAAs are held by a combination of US and Japanese banks. The single A and the triple B tranches tend to be very much in demand from insurance companies.
So I want to dig into the AAA holders and buyers of CLOs, because this is something we hear about a lot. Are the big banks buying in the US, and what are the Japanese investors doing as well? Because these are the big anchor investors in AAAs. So Dave, are the banks buying? Are the Japanese investors buying? Are CLO AAA tranches back in favor?
Yeah, certainly. If you look at bank securities portfolio holdings, you can see that banks sat out about 18 months of buying securities, a combination of the Fed stress test and some concerns about risk-weighted assets. What we've seen since Q4 is a return of the largest U.S. banks buying CLO AAAs, anchoring new transactions. Like I said, we've seen that over the past year that maybe banks owning floating rate assets makes more sense for a bank in the terms of, if you think about a CLO AAA for a bank, it's corporate credit, it's a portfolio of 300 loans or so, and it's floating rate. So it's a good loan substitute for the biggest banks. So we've certainly seen the largest US banks continuing to buy. The other thing we're seeing is 40% of CLOs are now out of their reinvestment period. So we're starting to see some pay downs and some amortization. So we just had our annual securitization conference in Las Vegas this past week. And one thing we heard from many investors was they're really having to put a lot of money to work just to stay flat on their investments because of the amortizations and the pay downs, and also some CLO redemptions as the loan market rallied. So US banks, for the most part, are back buying the AAA. We've seen very healthy demand from Japanese banks for the past year or so. in talking to those folks, what we think is that, you know, their fiscal year is April 1st. Most of those folks have budget for to continue buying. So again, some of the concerns around exchange rate yields for those buyers are less true for the floating rate buyers, and they continue to buy. So it's been a healthy demand picture for CLOs in the last 4 months.
Yeah, that's interesting. We track the flows globally on the fixed income side of things for corporate credit and treasuries. And we've observed that over the past year, Japan's been a net seller of corporates, but a net buyer of U.S. treasuries. So it is interesting to think about the FX hedging dynamic. You know, are there things that are allowing non-U.S. buyers, especially Japan yen-based buyers, to buy treasuries and CLOs on an unhedged basis because there's, you know, some sort of inherent hedge built in, you know, the treasury play or the floating rate play, whereas for corporates, you don't necessarily have that. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic for sure. I want to go back to the reinvestment periods ending because this was something that made a lot of headlines last year. My colleagues at Levfin Insights were writing quite frequently about the end of reinvestment periods. And I think the thesis last year was this is not good for the loan market because there's a lot of refinancing that needs to happen in the next couple of years. You know, you have shorter maturity structures for the loan market. And if CLOs are ending their reinvestment period, who is going to step in and buy these loans that need to be refinanced? Is it a problem? Has it been a problem? What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's a great question. It was definitely a big topic last year. And we always took a different view that it was going to be far less of a problem than maybe this some of the headlines implied. So there's a few ways to think about this. The first is the headline sounds scary, to be sure. 40% of CLOs are exiting reinvestment. They're not going to be able to buy loans. But if we sort of break down this number, we can quickly see that it's not a bigger problem. The first is that entering last year, 25% of CLOs were out of reinvestment. So we weren't going from zero to 40, right? We were already dealing with this dynamic. So it's only an additional 15% of the market going out of reinvestment. And the CLO market is roughly a $1 trillion market. The second thing is that we had, you know, over 100 in issuance. So if you have 100 in issuance and then you have, call it 15% exiting reinvestment, from a net perspective, you're really only losing, you know, somewhere around 40 to 60 billion of demand. So the loan market's, you know, $1.5 trillion, a drop of 40 to 60 billion in demand. I think at the margins, maybe it had an effect, but I don't think it's that big of a problem for the loan market on a credit perspective. The other thing is that the CLO market share of the loan market has increased since 2018 or 2019. Historically, it's been roughly 50 to 55%. And because of floating rate demand and CLO issuance in 2021 and 2018, it's closer to 65% now. So if CLOs own a little bit less of the loan market, then I think that that's just normalizing back to a steady state. So we wouldn't think that CLOs going out of reinvestment is a credit concern for the loan market. Obviously, you know, the dynamics of the past 2 months have changed this in any way, in any event, because what we've seen is massive CLO issuance and older CLOs are being refinanced or reset. So that means that they're able to buy loans anyway. But even at the time last year, the last point on this is what we've seen is CLOs sometimes don't want to buy the shorter loans in the universe. But what we've seen is private credit coming in to refinance a lot of those shorter loans that may not fit a CLO portfolio.
Private credit, again, the white knight for the leverage finance market, at least in 2023. We'll see if that continues. So I want to talk a little bit about manager performance. It seems to me that the CLO market has a pretty motley crew of managers. You know, a lot of people have gotten into the CLO manager game. How do you think about the landscape of CLO managers? And from the investor perspective, how should they be considering which managers are higher quality, which managers maybe don't have as long of a track record? Are there different styles for different managers? Walk me through these moving pieces.
In my prior role, I spent 15 years as a sell-side analyst covering CLOs. Our team was basically the first to publish CLO manager performance and analytics. So we've thought about this for a long time. So the first thing is, you know, the headline number that you'll read is there's 140 to 150 CLO managers, and there's, you know, 8 to 10 entering the market every year. But again, if you look past the headline number, what you'll see is that 10 managers make up almost 30% of the CLO AUM. And the top 25 by size make up 50% of the AUM. So while there's nominally 140 to 150 manager, you know, the bulk of the market is in the largest managers. So when we think about performance, every sell side research desk now publishes updates on manager performance, and there's, you know, a dozen or so CLO metrics. The way I think about it is from a fixed income asset manager perspective, and that's what a CLO manager is. You're looking at to do two things. One is prevent losses, and two is provide the income that you've promised, in this case for your equity investors. So while there's a lot of metrics and you can really splice the numbers around the average rating of the portfolio, some of these other things, if people want to think about manager performance, we would really stress two things. One is loss performance, because this is a levered portfolio of double B and single B loans. So at the risk of overstating the obvious, loss performance really, really matters. Preventing losses is the best thing the CLO manager can do. In the CLO universe, that is called par build. Because it's an actively managed portfolio, people look at the principal balance of your portfolio and how that's changed over time. You can adjust that for defaults, obviously. And then the second is the distributions, the cash on cash. And the way we think about it is, you know, to then risk adjust that in terms of maybe someone is paying higher distributions, but they're having more losses. So they're sort of, you know, burning the furniture to heat the house. Or maybe people have very, very low losses, but their distributions are very, very quite low too. So on a risk perspective. The other thing is when we think about looking at the actual portfolios, you know, certainly at AGL, we have a differentiated approach to diversification and how we think about the portfolios. But there's a lot of information about both industry exposure and other ways to think about exposure within the portfolios. So I guess the headline here is, yeah, there's a lot of managers out there and CLO people really get in the weeds on this, but we would to drill it down to just who's preventing losses and who's paying more distributions.
Preventing losses always seems to be the name of the game for us corporate credit analysts. I also want to give a quick plug to our company, Bixby, that CreditSights recently acquired. Bixby provides fundamental information on the leverage loan universe for both public and fully private issuers. And they have a new CLO tool that they've been rolling out. I had a podcast discussion with Brian Conroy, who founded Bixby a couple of weeks ago. So if you haven't listen to that one, that's probably a good complement to my conversation with Dave today. So Dave, following back on the CLO manager size, you mentioned that there are, you know, a relatively smaller handful of managers that represent 50% of CLO AUM. How do you think about that dynamic? Should we just be focused on those big managers, or is there some other pro to the smaller managers when you're considering, you know, where am I going to invest my CLO capital?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing, one of the things that I think is the most underreported or underdiscussed data point in the CLO market is the relatively low level of overlap across portfolios of different CLO managers. So if someone told you that one type of fund owned 60 to 65% of an asset class, and most of these funds have similar covenants from the rating agencies, you would think that the overlap would be rather high. The overlap across CLO portfolio managers, different CLO managers, is 30% or lower. So it's really quite low despite this. So there are ways to think about not all the managers are buying, you know, just all the same loans. So when we think about this, obviously smaller managers who are less experienced, whether or not they're less experienced or an experienced team that just started issuing at their new shop, those liabilities tend to be less liquid because people don't know the shops. There may not be a performance history. So from that perspective, it's some things to think about. Some investors, especially if they're less focused on liquidity, they may favor those types of managers as a way to add spread. One thing we've noticed, though, is in the first 2 months of the year, the tiering in the CLO market between liabilities, that is the gap between so-called tier one managers and tier two or tier three, has really, really compressed. So the tier one to tier three is now maybe on a AAA. So a tier one AAA is called SOFR plus 150. Tier two or three might be only 15 basis points wide of that. in spring of last year, that basis was 40 to 50 basis points. So what we've seen currently is a lot of investors are saying, with tiering that tight, I'd rather pay up, get slightly less spread, and go with a tier one manager. Again, these are managers that are less focused on liquidity and how they think about it.
That is super helpful. So I think the last topic that we need to address is the elephant in the room of leveraged finance, which is private credit. I was talking to a buy-sider who was at the JP Morgan conference down in Miami this past week. And they said that, you know, if private credit was at, you know, kind of a frenzied pace of conversation last year, it has reached an absolute fever pitch this year. And I'm hearing it from all the clients that I talk to. Everyone is curious about private credit. What's happening in that market? Are there too many dollars chasing too few deals? And we've seen some interesting dynamics in the CLO market with private credit, with the share of private credit CLO issuance increasing. Dave, can you talk to us a little bit about what is a private credit CLO? How does it differ from, you know, the BSL market CLOs that we're maybe thinking about more frequently? And just what is happening in the world of private credit and CLOs?
So generally speaking, a private credit CLO, it's being issued by someone who's directly originating the loans. And a private credit CLO is more thought of as a financing tool for an originator of loans. So in this way, we would think about it more as a traditional securitization like you'd see in the ABS market. The typical CLO, the broadly syndicated loan CLO, is often referred to as an arbitrage structure in that CLO managers are purchasing broadly syndicated loans in the primary and secondary markets from dealers, compiling a portfolio and then issuing liabilities as a way to do that. So in that case, it's more of an asset management. It's more of a fund that you're managing. Private credit CLOs, as you said, it used to be called 8 to 10% of issuance every year was private credit CLOs. In the last 2 years, that's more than doubled. And one of the reasons for that is as private credit asset managers have gotten inflows, they've used the CLO market as a way to finance their expansion. Some of the ways they differ, a private credit CLO will have fewer underlying assets. So from that perspective, you're seeing lumpier portfolios. They also are less levered because of that. So you get a little bit more credit support. The average AAA on a private credit CLO, the historical average is about 45 to 50 basis points wider than a broadly syndicated. And because you don't have as much underlying information on the assets, investors get the information on the assets, but third parties don't. You don't get prices or ratings or things like that. The liabilities on private credit CLOs are less liquid. So they're more owned by insurance companies or those types of investors who are less worried about liquidity. The other thing is just a terminology point here. So this market used to be called middle market CLOs. And we were talking about, you know, the originators of middle market loans using CLOs as a way to optimize their balance sheet and finance their origination. I would say that middle market CLOs are now a subset of private credit CLOs. And there's a bit of confusion around the terminology. The CLO market is sort of fighting this out. The way we would think about it is it's natural to call private credit as the average loan size in some of these private credit CLOs has increased and they're no longer just $50 million EBITDA companies. So whether you call it middle market or private credit, the main difference is it's a financing tool for someone who's more involved in the direct origination of the loans.
I think that's super helpful. And there are so many questions about what is private credit. I mean, we're writing a primer right now on the world of private credit. And frankly, every topic that we dig into, we find five or six more questions that we then need to answer. So I understand why there's a lot of focus on this and a lot of confusion. So Dave, my final question for you, as a CLO enthusiast, if you know I'm an investor and I say, okay, Dave, you have convinced me CLOs are not taking down the financial system. They are the place to be right now. Spreads are not going to gap out when base rates fall. Where in the capital stack do you think you get the best balance of reward and risk right now?
I would say that AAAs, it's not an exciting answer, but the last time that investment grade spreads were inside of 100, AAAs were 25 basis points tighter. So if you look on a real, and I understand that there's a rate dynamic, but conceptually, AAAs, if you look at where corporates are, they should be much, much tighter. So AAAs, not very exciting. We would think of it as, you know, very good cash on cash, absolute returns, out of index way to increase your income over time. SOFR plus 150, obviously there's, you know, depending on your rate view, but I think SOFR plus 150 is very, very compelling. The other thing is what we've seen is if you do have a little bit more ability to withstand some temporary price volatility, CLO double Bs at 675 or 700 over SOFR have been a very, very good investment, especially now when you look at where high yield and some of the other investments are. So from that perspective, you may see some temporary price volatility around double Bs when the loan market moves. But in general, we would think that that's a very good place to be.
All right. You've convinced me. I'm going to go add some of those CLO AAA ETFs to my portfolio. I'll be barbelling it a bit with my Mez Equity Mutual Fund as well. But
also, just to add, the other way to think about it is the cash on cash provided by CLO equity is compelling. For a complement to other investments, you're getting 20 points of cash on cash a year. So again, your equity, you know, it's a different risk tolerance to be sure, but from a perspective of how much CLO liabilities have tightened in the past 3 months, 20 points a year of cash on cash is very compelling to any portfolio. And it's a natural de-risking in the sense that you're sort of that cash on cash, because in 3 years, you have 60% paid back. It's a natural de-risking.
I love the sound of a natural de-risking. That feels good, especially after the volatility in portfolios of the past few years. All right, Dave, I think that we are going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for joining me today. If anyone has follow-up questions on my conversation with Dave today, please feel free to reach out to me using that Ask an Analyst function on the Credit Sites website. Also want to give another plug to my colleagues at Levfin Insights and Bixby, both of whom really robustly cover the leverage loan market and the CLO market. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Credit Sites disclaimer. All price references correspond to the date of this recording. This podcast should not be copied, distributed, or reproduced in whole or in part. Neither Credit Sites nor its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of any information contained in this podcast. Credit Sites is not providing investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, is not providing research or making any recommendations, nor is Credit Sites offering or soliciting any transaction with respect to the purchase or sale of any security. The receipt by this listener of this podcast is not the giving of advice by Credit Sites or its affiliates.